Blow the horn. Go.
Everything that we do every day, we want to be a champ.
Get your mind right and let's go. Do the little things. Win every day.
It's the sole place they play football.
Everything with an attitude.
Alabama, you listen.
Keith fumbled and Alabama has recovered.
I told you what they were going to do.
Touchdown, Alabama.
It's 13 national championships.
Roll Tide!
I don't give a shit who we're playing.
Nothing they can play against. And make his ass quit. That's our framework. That's our MO with the team.
Daniel Moore, get your canvas ready.
Hi. Hello and welcome to another edition of the Alabama Football Podcast. Tom, we had an off week last week. You all rested?
I am, man. I have my big sliced bologna sandwich. I've had two cold beers, and I am ready to talk football.
Fantastic. Well, I think this Saturday we have this year's Game of the Century coming up, number one versus two, however you stack them up, LSU-Alabama in Bryant-Denny. Hey, let's just take this head on. Offense, defense, special teams, three units, ours, theirs, so six unique matchups. Pick one and break it down.
The more I spent on this game, the more excited I got about how we match up against them. I mean, when you look at the numbers at a high level, you know, both teams have a very balanced offense. Both teams have top 10 ranked defenses. You know, both teams are creating a lot of turnovers. But I really think in looking at the matchups, it's really going to come down to, I don't think LSU is going to be able to stop our running game. And I think that we're going to be able to make them one-dimensional with Jarrett Lee, and I think we're going to be able to cause some turnovers.
So you don't think they'll be able to stack the box, and you don't think they learned anything from the Tennessee game? They won't be able to stack the box and impact our run game?
I think they're going to make every attempt to. But I guess the thing that jumped out at me as I was kind of looking at last year's matchups and this year's matchups as far as the two teams, you know, it kind of reminds me of after Alabama won the national championship. You know, there was a Sports Illustrated cover, and it had Dante Hightower, it had Marcell Dareus, and it had Mark Barron. And I remember being so excited that we had a guy at each level of the defense. Well, last year I think LSU had that. And they've got a lot of playmakers, but they do not have a Drake Nevis and a Kelvin Shepard and a Patrick Peterson. They've got good players that are above average. But when you go back and look at last year's game, those guys, especially Drake Nevis, his ability to plug up the middle, they don't have that guy this year. And so I think that while Mark Ingram had a lot of success running the ball last year, you know, Trent Richardson also got hurt early in that game and only had five carries. And so I think having a healthy arsenal of running backs, I think we're going to be able to wear them down.
And I think wearing them down, I'm glad that's kind of where you took it. I think wearing them down is really going to be the name of our game. I think we're going to work the running game early. But, you know, I guess the irony is something that we've lamented the last couple of weeks, the short passing game. I think that's where we're going to work them over in the short passing game. We're going to try to burn the clock early, keep their defense on the field, start to wear them down. They're a little undersized, if you will. So I think we run them around a little bit. I think we run at them a little bit. And that starts to take its toll as the game wears on.
I would agree. And, you know, going back to the Drake Nevis comment earlier, you know, they've got a lot of returning players. Most of their defensive players were there last year. They've got a lot of game experience. But you take a guy like Ryan Baker. You know, Ryan Baker led the team in the Alabama game last year with 10 tackles and had two sacks. And when I went back and broke down that game footage, both of his sacks came on a delayed blitz up the middle after Drake Nevis had basically had both of our guards and our center blocking him. And Drake Nevis gave Ryan Baker protection to fly to the ball and have 10 tackles. And once again, we just had Mark Ingram. And so if you're able to bring in a fresh Eddie Lacy and mix him in with Trent Richardson, and Ryan Baker doesn't have that kind of protection, his butt's going to get wore out during the ball game.
Well, absolutely. And then you even think of the delayed blitz. If we're running some screen game and some short crossing patterns, maybe crossing the tight ends like we've seen before, you know, him blitzing on a delayed blitz actually plays right into our hands.
It does. And also, when I was looking back at the game last year, I mean, it kind of reminded me of the Tennessee game this year. I mean, everything fell their way. you know, as I was going back and breaking down this LSU defense and this great ranking that they have, man, they haven't played anybody. Granted, they've got some stats, but the Tennessee and the Auburn and the Florida are not the Tennessee, Florida, and Auburn of old. I mean, just very quickly, you know, Florida was ranked 94th on offense. Tennessee was ranked 102nd, and Auburn was ranked 89th. And earlier in the year, when they played two good offensive teams in Oregon and West Virginia, you know, they gave up in the mid-20s. And so I think we're going to put up a lot more points on, I mean, when you look at our team, I mean, balance is the word. I mean, we're averaging 229 yards a game running the ball and 230 yards a game passing the ball. I mean, it kind of goes back to you and I talking about pick your poison and we're a hard team to prepare for. Man, there's just no way they can stop all the possibilities that we can throw at them.
No, I agree with that. And, you know, even looking back at the performance they put on Oregon, which is kind of heralded as their big, you know, sort of masterful win. You know, they capitalized on, you know, four or five turnovers. And if we're able to control the ball, control the clock, and not turn it over, then I think that certainly plays in our favor. What of their defense does concern you, if anything?
Well, in breaking down their guys, because nobody really jumps off the stat sheet to me year to date in the front seven. I'm obviously impressed with the play of the freshman Anthony Johnson. I think he's going to be a Marcel Darius in the making, but he's just coming in situationally. But, you know, their back four has to be their strength. I was thinking, you know, let me really break down this front four for LSU, and, you know, they're all above average, but there's no Drake Nevis on that front four. And when you look at their back four, you know, they've got three sophomores. I mean, obviously, you know, Matthew is the guy that everybody knows about because he's getting all the pub. But they've got three sophomores who really came in last year and made key plays for them in the game against us. They've got Simon and Matthew and Eric Reed who all made key plays last year as true freshmen, and they're all back. I guess to answer your question, I think the strength of their defense is their secondary.
Yeah, I agree. I think Maurice Claiborne is the, you know, potentially a dominant cornerback. And, you know, reports are that he's a first-round draft pick this year if he comes out. I mean, if they blanket him on Mays, who, you know, Mays would be considered our leading receiver, they stack the box to slow down Trent. That you kind of use Matthew, who, you know, the Honey Badger, he don't care. He's a pretty good player. I mean, you know, he's a sophomore and he has more career turnovers than, you know, anyone in LSU history. And so he's kind of a wild card player. I can see how they can start to at least come out early. And if they're able to take away Mays, stack the box to attempt to take away Trent, they can certainly have some success with that. I think we need to counter that with some, you know, like I said, the short passing game. We need to find the tight end. And then we need a wide receiver to emerge. And if it's, you know, we talk about the emerging wide receivers, and it seems like it's someone every week, someone different every week. We need someone to step up. If it's Hanks, if it's White, if it's Bell, if it's, you know, I don't know. You know, it could be, you know, one of the guys that maybe hasn't even gotten a lot of playing time so far, you know, Norwood or
right.
Someone like that. We're going to need someone to kind of step up and be that X factor that, you know, they don't know which one to take away. And then that's the one that needs to step up and make some plays for us.
Well, see, I mean, in breaking down the defense, and I'll just go on record as saying it now, you know, with all due respect to Matthew, I don't think he's as good as advertised.
He makes sexy big plays, right? He's the sports center player.
He's in the right place at the right time, and some other guys' play has made him look better. With all due respect to any of their secondary, and I do think it's the strength of their defense, they don't have a Patrick Peterson. And so I guess what I would say to that is last year, you know, Patrick Peterson blanketed Julio Jones in that ball game, and he still finished with 10 catches for 90 yards. So even though Patrick Peterson is a first-round cornerback blanketed Julio, he was still able to make plays. And so if I think he's better than any of their players in their back four this year, I think, to your point, there's just so many balls to go around. I mean, we can talk about LSU's offense here in a minute, but when we look at the stat sheet real quick, just to compare for a second, in LSU's wide receivers, they've only got three receivers who have had over 10 catches for the year, and we've played eight ball games. We've got 10 guys on our team
that
had more than 10 catches. And that just speaks to what you're saying right there. I mean, if AJ can keep his composure, because to your point about turnovers, last year, you know, for those that put that out of their mind, and I'm sorry to bring it back up for y'all, but, you know, McElroy had, you know, only his fourth pick of the year at the beginning of the game in the first quarter deep in our territory. We hold them to a field goal. And then late in the game when we're trying to, you know, get the game-winning or tying touchdown drive, you know, Drake Nevis kicks Vallejo's ass and causes a fumble. And so we had two fumbles deep in our territory, and we only gave up field goals thanks to our defense, but that was the key to the ball game. And so if AJ can do some of the things that we've been talking about him doing and what he's showing us, man, I think we're going to put it on him.
Well, I think if, you know, that's a key, right? And it's a key to almost any game. But, you know, if we can not turn the ball over, so not give them those type of scoring opportunities, as well as our defense played in spots last year, this year's addition is so much better. So maybe that does net out in our favor. I would look for some sort of wrinkle on offense. It's not going to be something really dazzling, but I think it's going to be a little bit of a wrinkle. I wouldn't be surprised if Trent has a little short pass to a tight end. I wouldn't be surprised if we use Trent vertically, maybe even come off from a timeout or something off the sidelines, not necessarily breaking from the huddle. And then Trent just casually steps in, is a wide out, and then maybe matches up against a safety or something, and we actually throw it to him down the field. We'll see some sort of wrinkle like that in the game, I'm sure.
Well, I'm going to let that be your call, because you've mentioned that, you know, we've been setting up having Trent and Lacey out wide all year. But I will tell you, surprisingly, the other thing that jumped out at me, well, I'm going to, I guess, not disagree, but I don't think we're going to see that. Because, you know, in last year's game, as I was breaking that game down, the other thing, and this goes back to your turnover comment, okay, we kept giving them a short field. I mean, something else that's so frustrating, I got so worked up as I was looking back at last year's game. You know, a team that was pretty inept on offense comes into the game averaging less, you know, about 250 yards. And they finished the game with 400 yards. But they had four plays that accounted for 200 yards. And, you know, they had a fake punt at midfield. They had a herky-jerky fourth and one play where they do a double reverse. And that's why I mentioned the Tennessee game for a second. It's like they went for broke. They did everything they could do to try to win the game. But conversely, we had three drives of over 75 yards in that ball game. We were the team that drove up and down the field, and I think that's what we're going to do again on Saturday.
Yeah, I think we're landing on the same page. We may be coming at it a little differently, but we're landing on the same page. Limit the turnovers, and then we need to work the ball and work the clock, short passing game, work the running game, and then, you know, take strikes where we can, but more concentrate on matriculating the ball down the field.
Anything else as far as their defense goes versus our offense?
I think we've covered it from my standpoint. If you saw something else in your study you want to break out.
No, I guess the only other thing I would mention as far as the, we mentioned it briefly, but I guess once again, for those that have probably forgotten this, Trent Richardson goes down. He gets tackled by Patrick Peterson at the 1 yard, you know, on a 1 yard touchdown pass early in the second quarter.
Yep.
I mean, there was about 13 minutes left. And I just want to mention that real quick, because Mark Ingram finished up with the game with 21 carries for 100 yards. And that's respectable. That's 5 yards a carry. But unfortunately, his counterpart only had 6 carries in the ball game. Now, he stayed in the game, but, you know, he was not the same Trent Richardson for, as you know, until the bowl game, until Michigan State. And so what happened because of that is we kind of had to rely on McElroy, and we had to rely on his arm, and we had to rely on an offense who was trying to stop, you know, Drake Nevis and the pass rush. Then they suddenly just started sending a bunch of guys our way, and Greg McElroy had to drop back, and, you know, he had to attempt 34 passes. So I guess the other thing that was interesting when I looked at last year's stats, they ran the ball 45 times and averaged 5 yards a carry, and their quarterbacks only had to attempt 20 passes. But it's so funny that the formula for success in the SEC is not to have to attempt more than 20 passes and let the running game take care of the rest.
Yeah, I think that's spot on. And I think, you know, one of the key points kind of baked in there that I want to call out is, you know, Trent's going to have something to prove this year. You know, he's a competitor, and so he could very reasonably take ownership or take some responsibility for the loss last year, you know, for just what you're setting up. and the competitor in him could really want to emerge.
Absolutely. What do you think about the matchup of their offense versus our defense? Start that breakdown.
Yeah, I think they've evolved their offense. You know, or some would argue they've devolved their offense a little bit. You know, they're more of a power backfield. You're going to see a lot more power eye with an LSU than you will other teams. We're going to see a lot of downhill running, which I think kind of plays into what our defense performs well against the run. Reuben Randall is going to be the guy to watch out for. I think he's worth a good 10 points. He'll get a touchdown, and he'll get another long pass, I'm sure, to help set up a field goal. He's someone that we're going to have to really try to take away. The dual quarterbacks system, you know, they may try to outthink themselves with that, but I think that we're going to see Jefferson in, you know, quite a bit just due to his ability to run the ball. But the trick plays, we're going to see some sort of flea flicker. We're going to see some sort of razzle dazzle in, you know, end around with, you know, double reverse end around with tight end or something, you know, like that fourth and one or third and one last year. You know, that kind of sets up, you know, the type of things we're going to see on offense.
Something that kind of jumped out for me is, like you talked about, as far as how this offense has changed. And a lot of it had to do with Jordan Jefferson and, you know, missing so many games early. What really jumped out at me as far as last year's team versus this year's team is they don't even have the same power running game that they did last year. I mean, I was shocked that going into this point, going into this game last year, Jordan Jefferson was the second leading rusher with 600 yards and 7 touchdowns. Behind Ridley, who I think is a little better than Spencer Ware. As far as, you know, Spencer Ware is good, but I think Ridley was even a little better back. And so, A, they've lost Jordan Jefferson's ability to be a playmaker because he's only coming in 6-7 times a game. And the other thing I want your assessment on is just really the decreased role of Russell Shepard. Also because of, you know, off-the-field problems. You know, Russell Shepard last year, he had actually had 33 catches for the year. And that actually tied Reuben Randall in second on the team. And going into this ball game, he's only had 9 catches. And so I just point that out, too, because their playmakers on offense is really limited. I think that if we're able to play a base defense and shut down Randall and shut down the run, which is our strength, I think it could be a long day for LSU.
Well, it could, and that's where we really need to watch out for Russell Shepard and what sort of packages do they use him in, because he's that X factor type of player. They can line him up at running back. They can run some end arounds. They can line him up in slot. They can do a lot of things with him. And so when you think about, we're going to run downhill with our three-headed running back by committee, and then we're going to throw over your head to Reuben Randall, I think our defense is multiple, you know, similar to what they're trying to do on offense, be multiple. Our defense is capable of addressing both of those topics. It's where you start to get to the third level, that X factor type player, where you really start to stress a defense. So, you know, if he's not going to perform well on Saturday, or he's not going to be available to perform on Saturday, then I think that really hurts them.
No, that's true. But another thing that's so important of comparing last year's game to this year's game is even their big play to Randall, you know, that was his, he only had 3 catches for the ball game. And one of them was that 75 yarder. And you'll remember this because we talked about this last year, how we actually sent Phelan Jones on a cornerback blitz. And so suddenly Mark Barron, who was playing in the back of the defense, and we've talked about this, right? It's funny how he went from being in the back of the defense after the Auburn game last year, now in the dime, he's sitting there next to the linebacker. But, you know, we blitz Phelan Jones, and Mark Barron suddenly has to cover Randall, who just runs a wide crossing route across the whole field, and it was a foot race, and there was no way that he was going to catch him. And I went back and watched the telecast, and I got so sick when I heard, you know, Gary Danielson say, well, this is Jordan Jefferson's first touchdown pass of the year since the first game of the season. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, I definitely think that we don't have Barron playing the deep middle. You know, like you said, he's going to crowd the box a little bit. I think that Reuben, you said 3 catches, you know, for a lot of yards. I wouldn't be surprised if he replicates that. I mean, we're going to try to take him away, but he's a very dynamic player. And that's where I say he's worth 10 points. I mean, he's going to get, you know, sort of a breakaway play, sort of a busted coverage down the seam or whatever it is, and get a touchdown. I just think that's going to happen. And then he's going to have another long pass where, you know, he gets a 30, 40-yard pass. We're able to haul him down, you know, and then we're kind of happy or relieved.
Sure.
You know, he's worth 10 points. And he's going to have those, you know, like you said, probably 3 catches for 120. And then he's quiet for the rest of the day.
I think another thing that's important to point out, too, is, you know, last year we had no Daquan Menzie.
You know, that's where when we go to the nickel, you know, Barron's not going to be back there. He's going to be, you know, much closer to the line of scrimmage. I think he's really going to crowd the line of scrimmage almost, you know, where we're going to play some nickel. But, you know, really Barron's going to be a linebacker. And so that's going to give us some multiple presence on defense. Also wondered, I'm just kind of toying with this idea. Let me just throw this out here. You know, with their downhill running game, and then if we only feel that they have, you know, one, maybe two receivers that we need to take away, then we may end up playing more base personnel. Do something that is a little different, that schematically is a little different, and maybe we play our base 3-4 defense, but we rotate Mosley in for a Jarrell Harris to give us a little more athleticism, you know, there covering the underneath passes.
That would be a nice move, because I think that having CJ in there versus Jarrell covering their running backs out of the backfield would make a big difference. I do think we're going to see a lot more base from our defense. And the other thing that I think is key too, and I guess I'm just getting really revved up as I thought about this matchup, is, you know, we talked about this at the beginning of the year, and we haven't talked about this in a while, but LSU also has not faced a healthy Courtney Upshaw and a healthy Dante Hightower in 2 years.
And that's a good point. You know, we're going to have to manufacture some pressure up front. I think that, you know, I think their offensive line is certainly a pretty stout unit. So we're going to have to manufacture some pressure. Upshaw being healthy, I look forward to him having a pretty good day.
I was surprised as I was breaking down last year's versus this year's stats. You know, we had made improvement in giving up sacks as an offensive line tremendously. But LSU has only given up 12 sacks on the year through 8 ball games. And so we always talk about Nick Saban affects the quarterback. He doesn't need to sack him. He just needs to affect him. But I think if we come in here early and get a few hits on Jarrett Lee like we did Arkansas's quarterback, I think we're going to get a couple picks.
Well, I think that potential certainly exists. It'll be, you know, sort of an interesting chess match to see how it plays out. Do we try to play more straight up? Do we run some stunts with the inside down linemen? Or do we just dial up some blitzes?
I think he's going to see a heavy dose of blitzes in this ballgame. I think this might be the most blitzes we've dialed up all year.
You know, potentially, especially, you know, probably when Jarrett Lee's in, I doubt we would blitz Jefferson quite as much just because of his threat as a runner. I think we want to get after Lee, force him to throw while he's running, try to force him out of the pocket. Jefferson, I think we want to keep him in the pocket. And so I think the personality of our defense will shift depending upon who they have in there. We may have sort of a different sort of, you know, base package or attack philosophy based on the quarterback.
No, that's true. And as we think about wrinkles, you know, if I'm Les Miles, I think Jordan Jefferson needs to play more in this ball game. Now, granted, he's only had 4 games this year. And you and I watched, you know, him throw a pretty sweet touchdown pass, and then Jarrett Lee kind of do the same to Randall against Auburn. And I was shocked when I looked at the stats for Jefferson. Would you believe that he's only attempted 10 passes all year in the 4 games he's played?
Yeah, that's lower than I would have anticipated. You know, he's thrown some really nice balls in some of the games that I've seen. But, I mean, you know, you talk about if you're Les Miles. If I'm Les Miles, number one, I'm crazy. But if I'm Les Miles, I'm dialing up some sort of package where I have Jarrett Lee and Jordan Jefferson in the backfield together.
Well, that's a good point. And I guess what I was referring to is last year, for them to have any chance in the ball game, it had to be with Jordan Jefferson. Because, you know, when they had that big pass play, we were probably thinking, well, hell, he hadn't thrown a touchdown pass in 7 weeks. We're kind of safe here. And then he still ended up running for about 40 yards in the ball game. And I just mentioned this because you and I both know when we've had problems with quarterbacks, it's been quarterbacks that are mobile. We do a lot better with quarterbacks that sit back there like a statue. And I think Alabama's defense has got to be hoping they see a lot of Jarrett Lee.
Yeah, I completely agree. We want to get after him and get him out of the pocket, and we want to keep the other guy, you know, Jefferson, in the pocket. You know, we don't want Jefferson to beat us with his legs.
What do you think about special teams? I've got a few things to throw out on special teams makeup.
Well, for our special teams, you know, sort of the bottom line I have noted is don't screw it up. Just don't screw it up on our special teams. You know, let's get some good punts. Let's get some good kickoffs. Let's not shank anything. Let's not get anything blocked. And then let's, you know, hopefully Mays can move the ball on some punts and we can get some good drive start. I don't think we need to do anything exotic. We are not going to win the game on special teams. We could very easily lose the game on special teams. So we just need to not screw it up. And then in terms of when sort of when they're operating special teams, it's kitchen sink time. You know, they're going to do an onside kick. They're going to fake a kick. They may fake a PAT. I just think in terms of all the trick plays, I mean, they're going to hit for the cycle on Saturday.
Well, you know, you talked about interviewing a punter on the quad or trying out a punter on the quad for Alabama, and Nick Saban had some pretty good punters when he was at LSU, and Les Miles is kind of doing the same thing because last year their punter did a really good job of keeping them in the game and getting us deep. And when I looked at their stats for this year, they have found a kid. They started a senior at the beginning of the season, and the senior kind of wasn't getting the job done. And so they took a redshirt freshman and brought him in, and he's been kicking for the last five ball games. And they are fifth in the nation with net punting of 44 yards. And just for kicks and grins, you'll probably laugh when I tell you where we rank in the nation on that stat. But I do think they're going to do a good job of making us, you know, move the ball the length of the field.
I think without question, you know, we're going to have to try to get some, you know, something brewing there, you know, for the purposes of drive start. But they have that wing kid. He's a redshirt freshman.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's a rugby style kicker. Yeah, that just seems to be a style that we've struggled with a little bit more.
So to that point, do you think, because Mays has been pretty ineffective when he's played against that kind of a punter, you know, do we expect him to really be able to do much at all? Or do we think that with the bye week, we might actually have worked on something and maybe have a couple guys back there, somebody back there with Mays to try to help neutralize the rugby-style kicker?
And we very well might, and I kind of hate where I feel like we might need to go on this, but I don't know that I would be too surprised if we saw Mays and Trent back there.
Yeah, that's what I thought you might say.
Hate to even say it.
Well, I hope it does not come to fruition. Another stat that I was looking at on special teams, and this just speaks to the defenses. LSU makes big plays, and this year they've really, what's really set their team apart is giving their offense so many chances. I mean, they come into the game leading the nation in turnover margin. They're getting about plus two per game, whereas last year, you know, they weren't even in the positive category. And so when I looked at I wanted to look under special teams at kick returns and punt returns, because I was just curious for the year which team was getting more opportunities. And I found it very interesting that when you looked at LSU, LSU was actually getting, you know, they've had about eight more opportunities with, as far as kick returns, as far as getting the ball this year. But then when it came to punt returns, Alabama has had 12 more punt returns for the year than LSU. And so that tells me that as a defense, we have done a much better job of getting our defense off the field and forcing three and outs. LSU just seems to be getting more opportunities in the kick return game because they're getting those short fields with those big turnovers.
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense. I mean, they're plus 15 on the turnover scale, and we're very efficient in getting teams out, you know, three and out. You know, just as you said, if we can not turn the ball over, then that sort of source of revenue, if you will, almost dries right up for them.
Right, and that's their sweet spot.
Yep. You know,
as far as what's been working for them. Anything else that you've got as far as the game?
Well, I went one offense and one defense. Who are your key players?
I think on offense for Alabama, the key player has got to be Trent Richardson. You kind of set it up nicely. I mean, you know, he's even talked this week in interviews about, you know, he feels like he's got something to prove. Also in the back of his mind, I know he's a real humble guy, but I hope he's thinking, you know, the Heisman is right there for me. It's right there for me for the taking. And so, you know, I've got to put up a big game on a big national stage, prime time, national TV, and I think he's going to do it. I think you're going to see Trent a la Florida with 30 carries. I think he's going to have 30 carries for a buck 50.
I think that would be a great night. You know, my offensive sort of key player of the game, and I kind of put this out there with, you know, sort of all things being equal. If Trent does, you know, sort of has his average performance, and if, you know, Mays has his average performance, and, you know, McCarron has an average performance, who really needs to step up and carry the load? And I have two guys, you know, kind of bracketed, and I kind of kid, you know, DeAndre White and Kenny Bell. At this point in the season, I'm beginning to wonder if they're not the same person. Because when one of them has a good game,
they don't look anything alike, man.
Well, I'm just saying, in terms of their performance, when one of them has a what we call a breakout game or has a good game, the other one is nowhere to be found. And then it just kind of rotates. You know, Kenny Bell will have a big day. Had a big day against Tennessee last week. Andrew White didn't have a catch, you know?
Right.
And so I kind of kid,
Feast or,
you know.
Feast or famine, right? Feast or famine.
Yeah, it's as if one of them can have a good day, but, you know, some catches, but not both of them. But what we need, and it kind of harkens back to what I said early, they're going to stack the box against Trent, and they have a cornerback that they can match up one-on-one against Mays, and they can start to take away, especially early in the game, they can start to take away, you know, two key components of our ball game. And so something has to step up in that X factor. I think a DeAndre, a tight end, Kenny Bell, I think one of those types of players can do it. I think it's going to come down to, you know, sort of the Bell or White. I'd love for it to be both. I'd love to see them both on the field running some go routes and really creating some space. But, you know, whichever one of those players, whichever one of their numbers is up this week, that's the player that really needs to be emergent. And, you know, the game could pivot on their performance.
You know, I like that call. And, you know, Coach McElwain, if, you know, you're taking notes, we would like you to have a formation four wide. We'd like to have DeAndre White on one side, Kenny Bell on the other. We want them early in the game to just both do a go route and test those cornerbacks. You know, to your point, they have not done that all year where they have put pressure on the defense on both sides of the defense.
Yeah, I'd like to see the four wides, you know, with Bell and White, like you said, at the wides, you know, Mays and Hanks in the slot. Let's just run some combo routes.
Yeah, absolutely. Who's your key player on defense?
My key player on defense is going to be Josh Chapman. He's not dynamic in the way that Cody was dynamic or Nevis or Glenn Dorsey, but he's a pretty effective space eater, drawing the double teams, collapsing, maybe not even collapsing the pocket, but certainly, you know, building a pile right there at the center and guard, allowing our linebackers free to roam. And so you take a team like LSU that's going to try to be a downhill running game. If Chapman can really clutter up the center of the line, you know, maybe make a tackle or two, maybe collapse the pocket into, you know, Jarrett Lee's, you know, feet a couple of times, I think that he could play a pivotal role for us.
Just to add on that for a second, I'm hoping he's going to be in Jarrett Lee's head, because another thing that you remember is last year, Josh Chapman had his first sack of his Alabama career. It was a 12-yard play where he just whipped the crap out of the center, a la Drake Nevis, and went back there and just nailed Jarrett Lee. And we were like, where has that been all year? So I hope he does that again in this ball game.
Absolutely. Who are you highlighting on defense?
I think if we're going to be running a lot of the base formation, which I think we will also, I really think that we are going to have to see Quentin Dial and Jesse Williams have big ball games. I agree with everything you're saying about Josh Chapman, but I think that the containment and keeping the edges and keeping them bottled up and keeping them in the middle of the field, I think it's just going to be so key that Quentin Dial and Jesse Williams steps up their play and kind of elevates a little bit. I mean, your JUCO transfers, you've been some nice compliments, but I'm ready for you to make a splash. I'm ready for you to make a big play. I'm ready for you to be the reason that Coach Saban went out there and signed you. He signs JUCO players to make a splash, and I need one of them to do a wow play. I need one of them to have a wow factor in the ballgame.
So no coincidence that, you know, we're both circling guys on defense on the DL.
You know, we could have talked about the Dante and the Courtney and the Mark Barron and the Robert Lester. I mean, Robert Lester has not had a huge game to follow up on his campaign from last year. But if we're going to be in this base and we're going to shut down their I formation and really take them out of the only thing that I think they're any good at, I think that whole defensive line is going to have a really good ball game.
We need to do that up front. I completely agree. I think it's prediction time, and I'm going to break it down like this. I think we get more field goals than touchdowns. And I think they get more touchdown than field goals. I think they get their 10 points from Randall, like I've talked about. I think they get touchdown either via turnover or special teams. I see us kicking 3 field goals, 2 touchdowns. I see a 23-17 ball game. I'll even break that down further. I see it 13-10 at half. So it's a ball game all 4 quarters. But 23-17.
That close?
That close.
Okay, well, I'm going to surprise you a little bit.
Bring it.
Because I don't think that they have played any teams, you know, like I said, when they played Oregon and West Virginia, in those 2 games, they got a lot of turnovers. And so they had a lot of opportunities to wear down that defense. But those offenses still moved the ball very effectively against them. And this is the best offense that they have played since then in about 5 weeks. I think it's going to be a 27-10 ball game. And there's really 3 reasons for that. Number 1 is we're at home. Number 2, we've got a healthy Trent Richardson to go with Courtney and Dante. But number 3, you know, I was looking back and I was surprised. I guess I shouldn't have been surprised. Do you realize that Coach Saban has not lost to the same opponent in consecutive years since he's been the coach at Alabama?
I saw that stat. It's been like 10 years. You know, he lost back-to-back to Spurrier when he was at Florida. It's been quite a while since he's lost to the same coach 2 years in a row.
I didn't track it back to LSU, but when I was looking at 2007 and looking at those losses, he followed up those losses by really kicking their tails in 2008. You know, obviously we don't get to play South Carolina this year, but I hope we follow this LSU victory up with doing the same thing to Auburn. And I think it's going to be a 27-10 ball game. And I think that's going to be a late touchdown for LSU. I think we're going to put them away at the beginning of the 3rd quarter.
Well, I think that it's an interesting thing, you know, because the 3 teams that we lost to last year, obviously LSU, you know, we can get some revenge factor this week. We have Auburn coming up. There'd be, I think, some nice symmetry for us to come back this season, avenge each of those 3 losses en route to playing for a national title. But I tell you what, not that this game needs any more amplification, but to lose this game for either team, to lose this game is a very expensive loss, because not only is it a 1-2 matchup, but Tommy, these are 2 teams in the same division of the same conference. And so the loser of this game will not even get to play for their conference championship, which puts them in peril of even playing in a BCS game. If they go to a BCS game, you know, it may be in one of the...
I started to say, let me stop you for a quick second. Let me add to that thought you're saying. What's really bad is whoever loses this game will end up being the Sugar Bowl representative, because the other team will get invited to the national championship game. And so pouring salt into an open wound, the losing team will have to play in the damn same venue a week before the other team gets a shot at the national title.
That's true. It being the same venue, and because the Sugar Bowl holds the title game, they have a lesser pick in sort of the round robin after the automatic bids. And so, you know, you got a team that's going to play against a crappy, you know, Big East champion, West Virginia, or some such team, or maybe a Boise State team, yep, which, you know, there's no win even if you beat that team. The ironic reality of it is that the loser of this game, it's an expensive loss. And so you kind of fall down the mountain in that respect. But the loser of the team could very well still be the second best team in the country.
Yes, that would suck. Let me mention as we close out real quick before you do that, guys, you know, for anybody out there listening that's enjoying this, it does take a lot of work to put this stuff together each week, and we're trying to get the word out as much as possible. And so please shoot us an email so you can get on the email list. And if you're getting an email from us right now, if you will just please forward it to anybody you think would like to listen to some good Alabama football talk, we would definitely appreciate it.
Absolutely. Hey, this has been another edition of the Alabama Football Podcast. Until next time, roll Tide.
Blow the horn. Let's go.
Everything that we do every day, we want to be a champion.
Get your mind right and let's go. Do the little things. Win every day.
It's the someplace they play football.
Everything with an attitude.
All right.